Welcome to the Nutrition Edit Podcast for high-performing women who want to up-level their health and feel their best in their bodies, careers, and personal lives. In this podcast, I'll sift through the latest nutrition and biohacking trends to filter out the bullshit, share what you really need to know, and help you put the good stuff into practice in a way that works for you. You'll get actionable tips from guest experts and myself on how to up-level your mindset, workouts, relationships, and environment, and start feeling like the badass woman you are. Join me as we bust through the bro science and male-centric health paradigm to help you achieve optimal performance, body, mind, and soul. Hello, beautiful. Welcome to the Nutrition Edit Podcast. I don't know about you, but just saying or hearing the word stress makes me feel, well, stressed. We all experience stress to varying degrees every day, and there are many stressors in this world that we have absolutely no control over. Things like political unrest, war, environmental toxins like air and water pollution, and social injustice. These are all stressors that most of us have little or no control over, although we can and absolutely should get out and vote and do whatever we can to create positive change. But my point here is that stress is an inescapable part of life. And how we react to these stressors is vastly different from person to person, depending on each individual's circumstances and resilience. Resilience is essentially a combination of a person's mental and physical well-being, or our ability to bounce back and recover from stress. Thankfully, we do have some agency and control over how resilient we are. And two of the most powerful tools that we have at our fingertips are food and movement. So today, I want to share with you how you can use food and exercise to increase your resilience and feel less stressed out, even if the external stressors in your life are not changing. So first, let's talk about the difference between acute stress and chronic stress. Acute stress is momentary or short-term. So like when you're driving and maybe you have a near-miss almost accident or someone cuts you off, maybe you have to run to catch a plane. This is what's considered acute stress. It's short-term, right? It's not ongoing and lasting. Whereas chronic stress is long-term or ongoing, and this is the kind of stress that can contribute to health issues, disease, mental illness, including things like high blood pressure, heart disease, obesity and metabolic syndrome, leading to type 2 diabetes. It can contribute to depression and even chronic pain. If you have a very stressful job or maybe a tense living situation where there's strife or abuse, maybe you're a caregiver for an ill or elderly parent or an ill child, or if you're someone who is marginalized or subjected to racism over and over, these are all examples of chronic stress. Another source of chronic stress that I should add is trauma, which is all too common. Most of us have some level of trauma, what's called either little T or big T trauma in our lives, but its effect on our health is often overlooked. And research shows a direct link between childhood trauma and chronic illness in adulthood. And I'll tell you, I've never personally met somebody who has a chronic illness who hasn't also suffered significant trauma at some point in their lives. Now, depending on your situation, you may be able to remove certain stressors from your life, but that's not always possible. So when I talk about stress management, I like to emphasize what you can do to help yourself navigate through the stress in life in the healthiest way possible. Because inevitably, it's going to come up at some point, right? No one can escape stress. One of the most common complaints that people come to me with is chronic stress. And after working with me one-on-one, one of the most common things I hear is that their stressors haven't necessarily changed much, but they feel like they're not as negatively affected by those stressors anymore. In other words, they're less stress reactive and they feel more resilient. So let's jump in and talk about what you can do to fortify your body and mind so that you're more equipped to handle whatever comes your way. I want you to take a moment and ask yourself, what are you most likely to eat or crave when you're stressed or anxious? What are the foods that you're typically drawn to? Are you likely to eat more or to eat less when you're stressed out? Some of us eat more, some of us eat less. When we're stressed, it's normal to crave foods that stimulate the pleasure centers in our brain and make us feel good. I call these blissy foods, or things that give you that kind of quick dopamine hit. But sadly, that only lasts momentarily, And those foods are highly addictive. And here's the thing that I want you to remember, okay? Food can either be a source of stress or it can be a source of stress relief. And while we may not be able to control our external stressors, we can control what we eat, right? Most of the time. Now, not everybody has full choice over what they eat or access necessarily to healthy, nutritious foods. But today, I'm talking to those of you who do have access to good food and have that choice available to you. So I want to clarify, too, the difference between internal stressors and external stressors. External ones can include things like work, relationships, your finances, different circumstances, like maybe you're in the midst of a move, or social media is a source of external stress. The news is the source of external stress. Our perception is also a source of external stress. So how we perceive something can be a stressor as well. Internal, although that can be argued that's an internal stressor, but I would say that's on the cusp. Internal sources of stress would include lack of sleep, poor nutrition, poor digestion, an inflammatory or a high glycemic diet, caffeine and alcohol, toxic load. So maybe you have a heavy mercury load or you've got mold illness, and exposure to lots of chemicals, things like that. Any other illnesses are sources of internal stress. And then also too much or too little exercise can be very stressful for the body. Something here to keep in mind that's also a major point I want you to take away from this episode today is that less internal stress equals increased resilience and less reactivity to external stress. Okay, so food, as I've talked about before, is so much more than just calories in, calories out. It is a chemical messenger that tells our body what to do or what not to do, okay? You probably have heard me talk about the donut versus the chicken breast illustration. How our bodies react to each is drastically different, and they stimulate different hormones or chemicals in the body, all right? So for example, that chicken breast is going to stimulate leptin. Leptin tells your brain, hey, I'm full, I'm satiated, you don't need to keep eating. It's also quite nutrient dense, right? Lots of protein, it's got some healthy fats, minerals, vitamins, et cetera. Whereas a donut, that's really loaded with just empty calories, sugar, starch, inflammatory fats. Both have basically the same calories. If you're looking at your average glazed donut and your maybe 6 ounce skinless chicken breast, okay? But that donut is going to stimulate something called ghrelin. We often call that the hunger hormone. This tells your brain, like, hey, keep eating. I'm hungry. Keep eating. And it's stimulated by these foods that spike your blood sugar but don't have any real nutrient density there. There's no real nutrition. There's nothing that's actually feeding your cells or giving you nutrients that you need. So your body is essentially saying, hey, I'm not getting anything really useful here. You need to keep eating. That's why someone could easily eat a few donuts before you felt full. You may feel sick before you actually felt full and satiated. If you tried to eat more than like one, maybe 1.5 or 2 chicken breasts, you would be stuffed to the gills. Like you couldn't, most people can't do it. So that's just a simple example of the fact that food is so much more than just calories. It's a chemical messenger. Okay, so when we're talking about what we want to achieve with a stress-reducing diet, so to speak, or how we want to eat to feel less stressed or be less stress-reactive, the goals for this, or the positive outcomes typically that we want, are going to be mental, emotional, and physical. Those are the two categories that we're looking at. So on the mental, emotional side, you really want to have mental clarity and focus, increased motivation. We'd all like more of that, right? Less stress reactivity or more resilience, like I mentioned before, less anxiety, that's a big one, and better interpersonal relations or better relationships. We feel more positive about our interactions, right? We can communicate better. We maybe have less social anxiety, things like that. And then physical benefits or outcomes that we're seeking with this would be better energy, more sustained energy, better sleep, increased stamina and athletic performance. This is really important for you athletes, and I know there's a lot of you out there. An overall increase in your health and being, of course, that's an obvious one. And then healthier hormones. So those are really key. And in order to achieve these outcomes, here are the big points that we want to achieve when we're looking for how to eat for stress reduction, essentially. All right. This is the to-do portion of the program. So first, you want to eat nutrient-dense foods. These are foods that are high in nutrition, right? Vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, things like your macronutrients, plenty of fiber, plenty of protein, good healthy fats, healthy, nutritious carbohydrates versus empty calorie carbohydrates. This is just about giving your body what it needs, right? Nutrition versus calories. So we want to increase those whole foods, like real unprocessed foods. These include colorful seasonal vegetables. Try to eat the rainbow. Don't just go for greens. Get a really wide range of colors. Clean, responsibly sourced animal proteins. What do I mean by that? You know, try to choose organic, pasture-raised, grass-fed. For things like eggs, you want those from pastured chickens. Free-range, cage-free means very little. And so look for pastured eggs. Wild-caught fish is a big one. The smaller they are and the lower on the food chain, the better, because you'll have less exposure to those toxic metals like mercury, cadmium, lead, aluminum that unfortunately are really prevalent in our oceans nowadays. Nuts and seeds are another great nutrient-dense food. Dark chocolate or raw cacao. Now, this is not highly processed like candy chocolate I'm talking about. It can be a dark chocolate candy bar, but look for 70% cacao or above. I like to go for an 80% dark chocolate bar. You want it to be organic because it's a very heavily sprayed crop. But yeah, dark chocolate is one of those amazing feel-good, high antioxidant foods. It's actually pretty nutrient-dense and great for killing sugar cravings. Another wonderful food to incorporate are fermented vegetables like sauerkraut and kimchi. And then fruit. Fruit is wonderful. I think that fruit has been demonized when we're talking low sugar, low carb eating. And yeah, some fruit is very high in sugar, especially your tropical fruits. So in moderation, I always say treat fruit like nature's dessert and eat it instead of just having it on its own. Have it maybe as dessert when it's buffered by a meal that's rich in protein and fiber, things that are, you know, dampen that glycemic effect that it has on you or any blood sugar spike that it would have on you. And really here, the point is just to focus on eating more of these really whole nutritious foods and think less about what you want to avoid. And I've done a workshop on this before, and I had a whole slide showing like what our brain actually needs when we're super stressed out versus what our brain wants or asks for when we're super stressed out. And the what our brain needs photo is all of these wonderful whole foods and salmon and avocados and all these veggies, right? And the what our brains wants picture is the junk food, the chips, the donuts, the sugar, whatever sweet or salty, crunchy stuff. And even though your brain is asking for it, that's not actually what you need. So for me, it's just helpful to remind myself, hey, yeah, my brain wants this, but what I actually need are the nutrients and building blocks to help me be more resilient and to cope with stress better and to create those wonderful neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine and all those things that help us feel good and steady and less stressed out, less anxious. Those foods are going to help your body do what it needs to do so that you can actually feel better. Whereas those kind of quick dopamine hit foods that are high in sugar, high glycemic, quite inflammatory, they give you a momentary feeling of, oh, okay, I feel a little bit better, but they really work against you in the long term. So just keep that in mind. Another really important thing that we want to do is boost digestion, because you want to make sure that you're getting the nutrients from the food that you're eating, right? You've all heard the saying, you are what you eat, but in actuality, you are what you can actually digest and absorb. If you're not absorbing it, you can eat the healthiest food in the world and you're not going to reap all the benefits. So quick tips for boosting digestion, chew your food well and eat slowly. And try to be relaxed when you eat. Try not to eat on the run whenever possible. I know sometimes that can't be avoided, but try to eat in a calm, relaxed state, ideally away from your computer or other distractions. Chew well, eat slowly, be present, and just experience your food. Experiencing with others is a wonderful thing too. And sometimes it helps to just take a few deep breaths before you eat to calm your nervous system, put you into more of that parasympathetic, like rest and digest state, okay? Supplementing with digestive enzymes can be super helpful. So if you have problems with digestion or you tend to get like gassy and bloated after every time you eat, digestive enzymes can make a huge difference. It can be super helpful. Insufficient stomach acid is something that's really common. Stomach acid is also known as hydrochloric acid. And if you're not producing enough stomach acid, which can get downregulated when we're highly stressed, especially for women, it will prevent you from absorbing things like B12 vitamins. You won't break down necessarily your proteins well enough or fibers well enough to get the benefits from them. So you really want to make sure that your digestive fire, so to speak, which encompasses everything from like the enzymes in your mouth to the enzymes, stomach acid, bile, pancreatin, all of these things that we produce to break down our food. So we want to support our body to produce that digestive fire. And we can do that by smelling our food, looking at it, cooking for ourselves. All of those things will stimulate digestion. And eating slowly will help with that too. Sleep, all of these things are really important. Another thing that people do often is they drink a lot of water with their meals. I know that this is really common, especially with people trying to lose weight, because they feel like if I have a bunch of water in my stomach, I'll feel fuller and I'll eat less. The problem with this is that it can really dilute that stomach acid we were talking about. I want you to stay hydrated. You've heard me bang on about drinking enough water over and over, and it's really crucial to be well hydrated and to drink enough. But I'd love for you to avoid it about 30 minutes before and after. If you're sipping a little bit with meals, not a big deal, but don't like gulp down a giant glass of water before a meal, because that can actually diminish your digestive capability. Okay, next is reducing inflammation. So think of inflammation as internal stress, all right? Now, inflammatory foods are way too prevalent in our world nowadays, especially in America. High sugary foods, like high glycemic foods, anything that's going to spike your blood sugar, those are inflammatory. But also things like what we call industrialized or highly processed or refined vegetable oils, things like canola oil, processed seed oils, soybean oil, peanut oil, sunflower and safflower are really common ones that are used. All of these things are highly inflammatory oils. And those are what are used in restaurants because they're inexpensive. I mean, you're not going to find, you know, coconut and avocado oil in or ghee in restaurants because those are very expensive fats to cook with. So just keep in mind, if you're eating out often, that is something that you want to have to, you know, just you want to be cognizant of. Try to eat home at home more often and definitely take your omega-3s, like your fish oils, to help just keep that balance of omega-3s to omega-6s. And it can help counteract that inflammatory effect to some degree, but your best defense is cooking at home more. Additionally, inflammatory foods would include just processed foods, fast food. If something is packaged and it has a million ingredients, that's usually a big red flag. I don't have time today to get into specific ingredients, but just look for organic foods that are minimally processed and have fewer ingredients. That's the easiest way to go about that. And you want to just go for something that's closer to its natural state, right? Poor quality animal proteins. So this would include anything that's factory farmed or from feedlots. So yeah, again, going to be hard to avoid if you're eating meat and poultry in restaurants or outside the home. Now, if you're eating it someplace that is truly farm to table or is an organic certified restaurant or is just really careful at their with their sourcing, that's a different story, but those places are few and far between. And seafood, again, if you're going to eat seafood, which is what I often default to when I'm eating out, I usually try to go for like wild salmon or something that's smaller and lower on the food chain. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about poor quality animal proteins. Just try to get the best quality that you can. Another thing that I would really recommend avoiding is artificial sweeteners. These include things like aspartame, sucralose. What's the latest one? Oh, allulose. I had a whole episode on that last season. Check that out for sure. But all of these artificial sweeteners are really problematic.
aspartame is a neurotoxin, and they can actually trigger more sugar cravings and cause issues with blood sugar regulation. So while they may not contain sugar, they're still problematic and quite inflammatory. I was going to say something else about that, but it'll come back to me. Oh, I know. I was going to recommend just organic stevia or organic monk fruit. Things like Truvia, monk fruit in the raw, like a lot of those things have a lot of nasty additives that you do not want. So stevia and monk fruit are fine, but just use them in smaller quantities and make sure that they are minimally processed and organic. Okay, next, regulating your blood sugar. This is really interlinked with stress and anxiety too. If your blood sugar is all over the place, that can absolutely cause anxiety, and it's a super stressor for your body to have dysregulated blood sugar. So that's coming from those high glycemic foods. Anything that's high sugar, high processed starch, or simple sugars, simple carbohydrates, those foods are going to be the ones that spike your blood sugar. And you want to kind of keep your blood sugar as even keel as you can. You don't want big peaks and valleys. This is a big deal. It's really crucial for brain health. We talked about that in the last episode. But I'll tell you a little story to illustrate that. Like when we're thinking about stress, we have to think about the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system states, okay? Sympathetic is when you're in that sort of fight or flight state, fight, flight, or freeze. And parasympathetic is what we call like rest and digest. That's when your nervous system perceives safety. It's conducting bodily functions in a healthy manner and everything's hunky-dory. But if you go into a sympathetic state or that flight freeze state, a lot changes. Your body's going to shut down digestion, going to increase and produce stress hormones. I often tell the story of if you're out walking or hiking on a trail and suddenly a mountain lion jumps in front of you, what happens, right? Your pupils dilate, like you're going to produce adrenaline and cortisol, which are these quote unquote stress hormones. Your blood sugar is actually going to increase because your liver is releasing glucose to send energy to your big muscles so that you can run like hell or jump up and down and scare the predator away. Now, the thing to keep in mind here is that your cells don't necessarily, they can't distinguish between running from a predator and being under chronic stress all day, every day. So we already have a stressful lifestyle, typically here in the US. So if you have a stressful life, just know that you have to be even more vigilant about your blood sugar regulation because you're probably already, I won't go too much deeper into that, but this is an important thing. So trying to eat low glycemic food, those nutrient-dense foods high in fiber, protein, healthy fats, these things will help you regulate your blood sugar. And breakfast is really what sets the stage for your blood sugar, your stress hormone fluctuations throughout the day, and it can dictate often cravings that you have at night. So what you want to do is really set yourself up for success by choosing the right breakfast of high in protein, healthy fats. I generally recommend avoiding starchy carb or carbohydrate dominant breakfast foods, okay? And then caffeine in the morning. Again, I've talked about this before, but I always recommend having food before caffeine versus hitting your system with caffeine on an empty stomach, especially for women. Men seem to tolerate this a lot more. And depending on your genetics, you may be a really fast caffeine metabolizer. But if you're somebody who finds that you're having energy fluctuations throughout the day, cravings, especially at night or after dinner, then you really might want to try not having that caffeine on an empty stomach because it's pretty stressful for your system. It's hard on your adrenals and it can mess with your energy and hormones throughout the day. Okay, moving on. Replenishing nutrients depleted by stress. This is a really big one. In fact, I have an entire handout for my clients that lists all of the foods that are rich in the nutrients that are depleted by stress. So magnesium, B vitamins, omega-3s, vitamin C, calcium, zinc, selenium, antioxidants, and even protein. If you're under increased stress, it increases your need for these nutrients, okay? So this is where you really want to eat nutrient-dense foods and possibly even take a really good quality multivitamin and mineral as sort of a nutrient insurance policy, if you will. That can be helpful. but it should always come from diet first. Supplements are just that. They should supplement a good nutrient-dense diet. Okay. Oh, and one more thing I'll say about that. If you can think of your body as a race car, right? If it's driving faster, it has more of a need for fuel. So if you're putting more demand on your body via pushing yourself harder with fitness, like you're training harder, or you have increased stress in your life, you have an increased need for nutrients, all right? So just think of it like that, like more stress, more nutrient need. Not more calorie need necessarily, but more nutrient need. They are different. Okay, next big tip. Reduce caffeine and alcohol. And I know that this is a tough one because typically when we're stressed, what do we think? Ugh, I want a drink or I want a glass of wine. And then we're tired, right? Because we're stressed out. So in the morning, we kick the day off with coffee and then we wind down with a drink. And it's just this vicious cycle. Both caffeine and alcohol are essentially liquid stress because they both stimulate production of our stress hormones, particularly cortisol. A lot of you come to me complaining about belly fat. Guess what contributes to belly fat storage? Increased cortisol, especially those of you who, like me, are in perimenopause or are in menopause now. This is a big one. Alcohol is a huge contributor to belly fat. And if you want to keep off that menopot, so to speak, I really encourage you to cut out the alcohol or be really strategic when you do have it. And minimize or eliminate caffeine, because those are two ways that you can really manage that internal stress, okay? And definitely avoid both on an empty stomach if you're going to have them. Food will buffer the effects. And if you do drink and you're having more than one drink, have at least 8 ounces of water in between each. This is another thing that women don't tolerate as well as men do. Typically, men will metabolize alcohol and caffeine better than women. So unfair, but that's just the reality. Yeah. So caffeine, just really limit it. Avoid it after noon, like 12 p.m. typically. It depends on what time you go to bed, but typically after 12 p.m. is when I tell people, like, just avoid it altogether. And then also don't combine caffeine with a lot of sugar. I know I hear so many people say, like, I'm so struggling with my weight, or I'm really anxious. And they are often the same people who in the afternoon have a big energy crash, and that's when they go for a coffee and a pastry. And it makes sense. I understand that. Like, it gives you that quick boost. You feel a little bit better. It gives you a little break. You have that treat, but it will serve you better and you will feel much better if you can replace that with a different ritual. Maybe make a cup of tea, preferably herbal tea if it's in the afternoon. Have something with good protein, or eat half an avocado, something that's really nutritious that will actually increase your energy on a cellular level versus just giving you that kind of hit of adrenaline and that little dopamine hit that's going to make you crash again and put you back into that vicious cycle. Okay. All right. Next big tip for stress reduction is to optimize your body's ability to detox. And this is a huge subject. But in short, you want to make sure that you are eliminating properly. So drinking plenty of water, yeah, you'll pee often. That's okay. It's good. You want to stay hydrated in order to stay regular. You should be pooping at least once a day, if not twice. Two or three times is ideal, but one time is absolutely got to happen. You should be pooping every single day. Sweating is a great way to detoxify. Through exercise is the most effective way, but sauna is also super helpful. Breathing is another way that we detoxify. I really notice personally that when I'm under stress, I take very shallow breaths, and I'll catch myself during my work day not breathing deeply enough or taking full breaths. So that's another one to really pay attention to. And if you're like me and you tend to breathe shallow and you're stressed, just check in with yourself. Maybe even set an alarm in your phone to remind you, hey, are you breathing? And it sounds simple and silly, but it's astounding how many people are actually not breathing well or taking full breaths during the day, or just will stop breathing and then realize, oh my gosh, like, I've been holding my breath. So breathing is key. The other one is lymphatic drainage. So your lymph is the fluid that's in and between all of your organs and tissues and bones and everything. And It is a key component of our immune system. A lot of toxins and things are dumped into that lymphatic fluid. And the only way that we can get that to circulate is through movement or massage. It does not have a pump like our circulatory system does with our heart. So we have to either move or be massaged in order for that lymph to move and essentially move all that stuff out of our body, okay? So getting regular massage is amazing. Obviously, move your body with exercise is the best thing that you can do. Dry brushing is a really great thing for lymphatic drainage. Jumping on like a mini trampoline or rebounder is really, really great for lymphatic drainage. So those are all ways that you can optimize your detoxification ability. And of course, your diet is a key component here, right? Eating those nutrient-dense whole foods, especially things that are highly antioxidant, and foods like cruciferous vegetables, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. Those are really wonderful liver supportive foods that can really support your body's natural abilities to detoxify. And like I mentioned before, we're just exposed to a lot of gunk in our daily lives that we don't necessarily have control over and we often can't even see. So supporting your body's detox pathways is really key. Another component here is sleep. And while this may not seem to you like it's directly linked with nutrition and exercise, it absolutely is, because your body is doing so much work and so many important processes are happening during sleep. That's when we actually build and repair muscle tissue, we burn fat, your brain is detoxing, you're healing, and there's so many things that are going on. And if you're not well slept or you're getting insufficient sleep on a regular basis, you will be less emotionally resilient. You're going to be more stress reactive. You will be more insulin resistant, which is not good. And you're going to have more sugar and carbohydrate cravings, which just make everything harder, right? So sleep is really crucial, and it's hard to overemphasize the importance of sleep and how, you know, crucial that is. So definitely make that a priority for yourself. So here's some common food and beverage swaps that I'm going to throw out there for you. And hopefully this will make things a little bit easier for you to just move in a better direction when it comes to what you're eating and drinking. So sparkling water is a great, nice thing. There are a lot of really interesting non-alcoholic spirits out there right now. Some are higher sugar than others, so read your labels. Just be cognizant of what you're having and don't go for the high sugar options. Kombucha, like a low sugar kombucha, can be great. Or tea, like herbal teas, instead of alcohol. I personally love to make a pretty little mocktail or drink at home with sparkling water and maybe some interesting bitters, or I'll mix it with one of those interesting non-alcoholic spirits. I might sweeten it a little bit with a couple drops of monk fruit, and I'll put it in a fancy glass with a little sliced piece of fruit. So it's a fun, relaxing ritual, and it feels like a really special treat. Instead of going for the sugar or processed foods, go for those nutrient-dense foods like I mentioned before. So protein, produce, your veggies, healthy fats, those are the things that are really going to serve you well. Again, tea instead of coffee can be less intense. Even caffeinated tea can be a lot less stressful on your body than coffee. It seems to be easier on the adrenals for most people. Obviously, this depends on how much you're drinking, right? Green tea, I am a huge fan of, because green tea is actually very high in L-theanine, which is very calming. Yes, it has caffeine and it can give you that little, it can perk you up a little bit, give you that little boost, but it's balanced out by that L-theanine, and green tea is also incredibly antioxidant. So that's a really great swap that I love. As someone with ADHD, I find green tea is really helpful for my focus, and it doesn't give me the jittery feeling that coffee often does. So you might give that a try. And then just keep healthy snacks on hand. So nuts, seeds, protein, like maybe organic jerky or tinned fish that you can easily access. Avocado is one of my favorite things. Having those on hand instead of sugar or empty calorie foods is really helpful, because there are going to be times when you're like, I need something and I need it right now. And if you have something healthy on hand, you're a lot less likely to take that trip to Starbucks or the cafeteria or the candy bowl, whatever it is that's normally tempting that's not serving you well. So those are my tips for reducing stress with nutrition. exercise is also a really crucial thing. And there has been a lot of research lately showing that regular exercise is as effective and often, or sometimes more effective than antidepressant medication for depression and anxiety. So moving your body is really crucial. And look, this does not mean you have to suddenly overnight become a gym rat and be working out for an hour or 5 days a week. No, just get out and walk. In fact, walking, yoga, and strength training, I believe, were the three things shown to be most effective for better mental health. So moving your body is, again, a stress reliever if you're doing it the right way. When it can become a source of stress is if you're overtraining. I see this a lot with the women I call my cardio queens. They come to me and they're doing like 5-6 days a week, an hour a day of spin class or a boot camp or something really high intensity. And they're doing too much of it with an already stressful lifestyle, and it's actually working against them and becoming another source of stress versus being a stress relief. And that can be tough because I know sometimes that feels like a stress relief. It's an outlet. You're shaking off the stress of the day, what have you. But I really encourage you, if you're going to do high intensity cardio workouts, limit them to 30 minutes, especially if you're doing them really frequently. I'd rather see you add in a couple of strength training days and maybe you do a couple yoga days and then you do a couple 30-minute high-intensity cardio days over the course of a week. You may find you actually get better results. You feel less stressed. Your sleep might improve. You might have less cravings, less hunger, simply because your body is getting more of that kind of low-intensity and restorative exercise and movement. And look, if you're someone who's not into exercise yet, just start small. Just maybe get out and, especially now that it's coming into spring, the weather's a little better here in the Northwest. I don't know where you are. You may be in the Southern Hemisphere, in which case you're coming into fall. Different story. But just getting out and walking is such a powerful thing to do, and it's really wonderful. You don't have to speed walk. Just walk. As humans, we're meant to walk a lot. And instead, we end up sitting all day long. And it's really not good to be indoors sitting on our butts all day. Even if you watch TV and march in place, like this is super, super helpful. Just move your body. Get a little rebounder trampoline. You can get them really inexpensively. Do that while you're watching TV in the evening or listening to a podcast, whatever that is, right? Just get some more movement in and try and get it regularly, because that is a big needle mover when it comes to reducing stress, depression, anxiety. Okay. And I'm going to include a lot of references in my show notes this time because there's so much science behind all of this. This is not just my opinion. There is a lot of research to back this up. So I want you to access that if you're looking to learn more or you just want proof. And at the end of the day, too, I want you to remember that everybody is different. There's no single way of eating that's right for everybody. However, we can pretty much rely on eating less processed, more nutritious food as being consistently good for our bodies, all right? That may look a little different for everybody. So I'm not saying here, oh, you know, you have to do this or that or the other thing. I think people get really dogmatic about, oh, you have to do keto, or you have to do, Mediterranean or a specific carbohydrate or whatever. Look, there can be really effective therapeutic diets depending on your individual situation. If you want to learn more about that, I am here for you. You can always schedule a consult with me. But in general, it's so individual, right? So you have to experiment with it. And getting professional help can be super helpful with that. So let me know. I'm here for you. But just don't feel like, oh, well, you know, don't be intimidated is what I'm trying to say. I think that there's just so much noise on social media and just out in the internet and media in general. It can get so overwhelming and confusing, and it really doesn't have to be. Just start eating, start moving away from the processed foods, eating more real, whole, unprocessed things that are more nutritious, and focus on incorporating more of those foods. Try not to focus so much on, I shouldn't eat this, I shouldn't eat that, because that will definitely make you think about those foods all the time, right? So focus on what you should do, not what you shouldn't. And remember too, that nobody gets this stuff down perfectly or right away. Just start incorporating what you can and then build on it. Creating a healthy lifestyle and a healthy diet is a skill, and it is going to take time to build. So be patient with yourself, but be consistent. And when I say consistent, just try to make choices that serve you well more often than not, and often enough to reap the benefits. Because if you're not reaping benefits and not seeing changes, you'll get discouraged. So try to be consistent enough, especially at first, so that you can actually start to see changes. And even if you're not seeing results right away, stay the course, because I promise you are reaping the benefits. You just may not see that either on the scale or in visible ways right away, but it certainly cannot hurt you. It can only benefit your health, your mental well-being, everything to eat this way, all right? And don't try to wait until circumstances in your life are ideal, right? Because that's never going to happen. And when we're under tremendous stress or heightened stress or in the midst of shit hitting the fan in our lives, like, I realize fully that is a really tough time, maybe the toughest time, to start making changes in our daily routine when it comes to food and such. But I want you to reframe it and start to think about it differently. Think about treating your body and fortifying your body in a way that will help make you more resilient, that will help carry you through those times of stress, versus just letting food be an afterthought or a stopgap or grabbing something here and there on the go that's junky and inflammatory and that's just going to increase your stress and make it harder for you. And again, if you want help with this, reach out to me. There is so much more to cover here. And I've actually done a whole workshop on nutrition for stress relief for companies like McKinsey and Company. I've done it for the Association for Women in Communications. So if you're interested at all in offering this workshop to your employees, or you just want one-on-one individual support to learn more about this and how you can better increase your resilience and reduce stress in your life, message me or schedule a 30-minute coffee talk. You can go to my website, joliverwellness.com, to schedule that. Or you can shoot me a message there. And either way, I'd love to connect with you. I'm so glad you joined me today. And I really hope you found the show helpful and enjoyed the episode. So until next time, take good care of yourself. And we'll see you next week with a new episode.
Hey there, thanks for hanging out with me today. And if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave me a quick review. Also, check out the show notes for links to connect, follow, and share this podcast, and for information featured in each episode. See you next time. I am not a doctor, and the content here should not be taken as medical advice. All information in this podcast is for informational purposes only, does not constitute medical advice, and does not establish any kind of practitioner or coach-client relationship. This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Do not disregard medical advice or delay seeking medical advice because of information you hear in this podcast or any other, and do not start or stop any medications without speaking to your health provider. Always seek the advice of a qualified health practitioner before undertaking a new health regimen. This podcast and website represents the opinion of Jeannie Oliver and guests to the show. Opinions of guests are their own and do not reflect the opinions of Jeannie Oliver Wellness, LLC, or our producers.